having a good understanding, but also critically analysing why you're doing what you're doing so you can kind of apply that to other areas of the body is really important. And I think there are a lot of different things that runners or just athletes in general will just do them because everyone else does them, without actually necessarily understanding what is the reason why you do it. Because if you understand that reason, it is a lot easier to apply it to other elements of the body and what you're looking for too.
And your why can't just be because you saw it on Instagram.
Don't get me started.
Kia ora tato, that was our DCR Sports Lab live show. I'm Matt Raymond.
And I'm Eugene Bingham.
And this is Dirt Church Radio. Interesting conversations with interesting runners. I've been spending so much time digitally anyway at the Filson Library. And I found a library that I prefer to be in, which is the Wild Things Library.
Yeah.
Again.
Have you been like down there to Mel's place, Mel and Sally's place, and like sitting in the Wild Things Library?
In the hand-tooled leather chairs smoking cigars. No, I haven't, but I've been making... if you sign up to Wild Things, the VIP membership, you enter the code DCR2021. It's really cool. You get 15 months, price of 12. We know that. We get a little bit of ooh la la.
Yep.
They're happy. Mm-hmm. You're happy.
Because you get the extra 3 months.
You get the three months. You can do the trail challenges. You can sign up for that. The Autumn Auckland one.
Get discounts at the store.
Absolutely. Really good discounts at the store. But you also get these sick emails with library articles.
Yeah.
It's not library articles, I mean, you don't borrow them, but it's stuff that you can read. So they go through and they collate. And there's lots of things in there from the sort of the useful for nine new tips for new runners or nine tips for new runners to the sublime, which is the Riverhead Backyard Relapse link to us.
DCR special.
DCR special.
Yeah.
You know, post-run stretching, going far, going faster, Dean Karnazes
is in
there.
It's like the Smithsonian of trail running.
Absolutely.
Basically, they collect everything that's great and good about trail. Because you can get overwhelmed, you know.
Yes.
You just get,
absolutely,
so
you can.
But here you go. You just go to one place in Wild Things, in the VIP lounge, hang out, take up a chair, and you can read through some of the... best stuff that's being written and said about trail running all around the world too.
Absolutely. Just
it's so cool.
Don't reference the Wild Things Library for your pathophysiology exam. They don't like it.
Don't do that.
No.
Don't do that. Use the code DCR2021. So you just go along to wildthings.club.nz, sign up as a VIP member if you haven't, using that cool code, and away you go.
Ooh la la.
Read away.
You know that boat that jammed into the Suez Canal?
Yes.
Ever given.
Yes.
Which had evergreen on the side, which was really confusing. But it was full of Ultra Spire Zygos 4 packs.
And that's destined for Aotearoa.
Destined for Aotearoa. And that's why there's been a hold up. I mean, you could make a comment on the fragility of global supply lines, but all we need to know is that there is a ton.
I'm doing jazz hands.
Jazz hands.
I'm excited.
Yep. Decimal point commas of Zygos 4 is back in stock in the Ultra Spire store, and if you go to ultraspire.co.nz, you will find said pack, 14 litres, great for a day out, great for a big day in the hills, all the gear you need. Eugene and I both use them, and they're fantastic. Ultraspire.co.
With the little cell phone
pouch. With the cell phone pouch.
Pouch thing. Man, it's like having a little baby koala.
Yeah, less mucus. Less mucus, generally, than, you know, they don't have a quacker either, but just, they're good.
They're real good.
Ultraspire.co.nz.
The other thing that's real good, the Further Faster store in Christchurch.
They are bloody good. They just sponsored the Mount Oxford Odyssey, which turned on the weather. But
gosh, you needed some gear from Further Faster for that race.
Montane gear. That looked really, really bad.
You could have carried a kayak on top of your head and pull that snow off.
Absolutely. If you had a dog with you, you could have carried that dog.
Yes.
Rambling aside, they've got the best stuff.
They do.
And they really know said stuff, and they're passionate about said stuff. Mm-hmm. I understand they're getting the beer reviews back up and down, and they're an essential part of the community. So if you go to furtherfaster.co.nz, the best little independently owned outdoor store in Aotearoa.
Or if you're in Christchurch or Te Tahi, pop into the store and make sure you are singing this song.
It goes something like further, faster, there in Christchurch. Rocky is hairy and so is Badger. Jules is nice and Jack is delicious. Go to further, faster now.
Oh, further, faster, there in Christchurch. Rocky is hairy and so is Badger. Jules is nice and Jack is delicious. Go to further, faster now.
Dipshits Radio.
Episode number 141.
Remember it? Episode 111, I made a cricketing joke.
Is there another?
That was 30 episodes
ago. Yes,
it was. Whoa.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I was just a little bit kind of, is there another cricketing?
Nah, I don't know anymore. That'll do. Anyway, flying by. Live show number, what is it?
Six. And we made it.
Yeah. Yeah. They all seem so different though, eh?
Absolutely. They're all different. They're all like, some are in the Fiordland like lobster catching room. Like that's literally the room that we're in at Kepler. Some are in a whiskey distillery. This one was in the beautiful space.
Yeah.
Halatau Tap House on Krangahape Road. And it was actually rather beautiful.
It was lovely, wasn't it?
Mm.
It was lovely. There still is that feeling at the start of, oh, how do we do this again?
Absolutely. And that persisted for me right through.
But it was good fun.
Absolutely. Good fun. Really good fun. Really good to meet a whole bunch of new people, actually.
Yeah.
That was cool. And chill out and, get amongst it. And some insane good knowledge was dropped.
Whoa, certainly was.
Yeah.
Certainly was. And some good running over the weekend too.
Yeah, really nice to be out and about and amongst it. I mean, I don't want to jinx things, but the weather was beautiful. I mean, talk about can't beat Wellington on a good day, can't beat Tamaki Makaurau on a good day, because it was fine.
I don't like to sound like an Aucklander though, but it was a bit chilly this morning.
It was quite cold this morning. Yeah, it was, but... It's a week for it's speaking of chilly, I mean, it's less than a week for Rotorua Marathon.
Yeah. Yeah, looking forward to it.
What number Rotorua Marathon for you?
This will be my 12th.
Wow.
Well, if I make it, you know, I've done 11. Started in 1994.
Yeah.
And so number 12, hopefully. I'm looking forward to I love the event because I lived there for a little while, so I've got that kind of connection.
Yep, got a heart connection. Yep.
And it's just such a beautiful course and it's a great vibe and, you know, just want to get it done.
Can I ask you some numbers? So what's the fastest time you've done it?
250.
250. Yep. And the slowest time you've done it?
I think, I can't remember, sorry. No, I can't remember.
So, but that's a fairly good crack. 250.
Yeah, that was good fun. That was a good day. That was a good day. Looking forward to it. Looking forward to it.
Amazing. And and I tell you, it's a run. I think Rebecca's done it 5 or 6 times.
Mm-hmm.
I've never done it. It's something that I'm looking forward to doing.
Yeah. We should do one together.
Absolutely, we should next year. Mm. But how good, bringing it back to the recent past, how good was that chat with Fran McEwen?
It was so good, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so good on so many different levels. I heard from her over the week, by the way. She sent me a Wikipedia link to the Goodwill Games.
Oh, right.
Do you remember she mentioned those?
Yeah, in Seattle.
What are the Goodwill Games? So, according to Wikipedia, they were in Seattle. Well, she told us they were in Seattle. But they were a Ted Turner of CNN fame thing, which they were supposed to be like a US-Russia friendly competition, kind of, I guess like a...
Was that to make up for the sorry we boycotted your Olympics, sorry we boycotted your Olympics, whatever?
Yeah.
Okay.
But they had a bunch of countries turn up. And in 1990, New Zealand won 2 silvers, but I can't see what they were for.
Huh.
So if anyone knows, let us know.
Wow, how good is that?
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, I really enjoyed what you were talking about with the Shift Foundation, how it was sort of co-authored by the people that the foundation was serving. I really like that.
Yeah, it was. It was so inspiring is a word that gets dropped too often, isn't it? But it was so inspiring.
And it breaks down that whole thing. I mean, how she said too, it's so easy to clarify or to sort of pigeonhole people as,
yes,
this person's gone off the rails. But it's so, and again, to use a cliche term, multifactorial.
Yeah, Absolutely, absolutely. And new adventures. How cool are they?
Yeah, how good is that?
Yeah.
And look, we got to say that greatest run ever, it hit people.
Sure did.
In the field. Sure did. So yeah. Thank you again to Kimberly for sending it in.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
to everyone else who got in touch. Arahanui.
For sure.
And how you been, man?
Yeah, catch a pie. I had my first real push at parkrun on Saturday for a long time.
Oh.
And I'd forgotten that pacing's quite hard, eh?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Even when you tell yourself beforehand, you know, look, you've got to pace this. Of course, I took off too fast, and then I looked at my watch and went, ugh! So then I slowed down too much, and then I had to try and make up for it. And it was, you know, it was a pretty good push to the finish, but man, 5K sucks.
Yeah, it really, like, keep your
It's got its own
keep
special
your ultra marathons, 5K sucks so hard.
It does. There's a photo that the event puts up on Facebook. They take photos, and I've got my eyes closed. I suspect I may have had my eyes closed for quite a bit of that.
Just going, no.
If I close my eyes, it doesn't mean it's happening. Anyway, I got out for a good run on Sunday too, and I'm looking forward to heading down through for Saturday, and if you're there, say good day.
Awesome. Yeah,
if you're aiming for 4 hours, jump on the pacer train with Tom and me.
Tom Augusta and you ran it home. It's going to be good.
It's going to be good fun. I just looked it up. 4:07. That's my slowest.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there we go. So that was a couple of years ago when I ran with Mark.
Oh,
yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So
there you go.
Yeah, hopefully we don't do that on Saturday.
No,
it'll be a pace of fail.
You got to be bang on.
Yeah,
you got to be bang on.
Yeah. How about you, man? How you been?
I've been really good. I mean, it's a lot going on. I'm changing jobs next week. I'm nearly at the end of my first semester, my postgraduate stuff. It's a lot on. And running's going really well.
Yeah.
I took on board, and I've sort of had a putative thing going on for a while. Doing a bit of cross training, which is something that I don't normally do. Anyone who knows me knows I don't do don't do it. And I've been doing it for probably a month now. And, you know, what we talk about the live show, it was super, super relevant to it. And so that's given me a real push to kind of continue doing it. I'm starting to see some benefits. And, had a beautiful run over the weekend. Really, really a lovely couple of runs. So, amazing. And I'm just starting to kind of froth about, you know, Wu 2K and...
Yeah. Yeah, I had a look on the calendar before, and it's actually
10
not
weeks.
That far away.
10 weeks.
Yeah. Better make those weather bookings.
Absolutely. Gareth
does. Well, Gareth does that, doesn't he? He's like times it perfectly.
Yeah, absolutely. We don't want to jinx it.
No.
Yeah, it's
we do not.
Been heckers either side every year for the whole time. But anyway, look, Patreon patrons, if you'd like to support what we do, we'd love you to come on board. If you set up a regular donation, even for the cost of a cup of coffee a month, help us do things that are a bit outside our reach at the moment, like buying audio equipment to improve our sound quality and getting us to more races to interview people. It also helps us keep the lights on, helping us to cover costs. Like
elocution lessons.
Yeah, speech lessons and website domains and stuff like that. But look, if that's outside your wheelhouse, we totally understand as well, and we're just glad you're here. Probably should know that the it's patreon.com/dirtchurchradio.
Oh yeah, that too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, bunch of races over the weekend.
Absolutely. It's bloody good, eh?
It's so good.
It is bloody good. My goodness. The great Cody run in the Coromandel.
Yeah.
All distances start and finish in Coromandel Town, which, have you ever been to Coromandel Town? It's so good. With the 68-kilometre going via the Waikawao Beach and the 30K on the old historic Colville Road. I did the Colville Connection a bunch of times.
Really?
Yeah, the mountain bike.
Huh.
The 72K. Fantastic ride.
Yeah.
Anyway, how good is this? So a Cody tree is planted along the trail for each person that participates in the event, and the vision is to plant 10,000 trees over the next 10 years. Oh, how good. And to create an avenue of Cody all the way from Waikawao to Coromandel.
How good is that? I love that.
It's really good.
More Cody trees. So get out there and run, people. Anyway, look, the Ultra, there were other events, but on the race site, I could only find these ones. But the Ultra event, Chloe Vincent, 9:53 flat. Victoria Gallagher, 10:28.04, and Sarah Healy, 10:33.30.
And James Bailey, 8:33.46 for the win. Shane Holmes, 8:48.34, and Zane Adams, 9:02.50.
That's pretty quick over that
course.
Yeah,
I reckon.
Yeah. Another race that looks spectacular.
Yeah.
The T42. Good old T42.
Yeah, T42.
Going strong, central North Island. Goes around the 42 Traverse track, which is another mountain biking path. And people often say it's one of the best one-day mountain bike trails in the country. So that was on at the weekend. And in the marathon, Johanna Ottesen, 3:35:30. Hannah Lund, 3:59:50. And Rachel Gamble Flint, 4:06:44. Johanna was also third overall.
In the men's marathon, it was Barry Harrison in 3:29:47. Tim Salmond in 3:31:18. And Stuart Munro in 3:38:13.
In the 24K, Jennifer Overend, 2:19:54, Charlie McCurdy, 2:25:47, and Amy Elliott, 2:27:52.
In the men's, it was Sam Shergold in 1:53:40, Sam Drummond in 1:59:39, and Tate Mertens in 2:56.
I should have made it compulsory for all Sams to run the dice there. But anyway, in the 11K, it was Holly Shuja, 1:05:59 for the women, and Christiane Cumming, 4:06:40 for the men.
And Katja Cumming took out the 6K in 27:47, first woman and first overall. And Shane Bint was the first man home in 33:27.
Yeah, so on down south, they weren't missing out either. They had the MT Outdoor Southern Lakes Half Marathon 10K, another Terry Davis special. And he makes a big call, actually, because it comes down the Cadrona Valley, finishing in Pembroke Park, Wanaka. And he promises it's the fastest and most scenic half marathon course in the country.
But cool, on road.
Yeah.
So Nancy Zhang, who is not only, she's the ultra trail champ and the mountain champ, and now she's the
half marathon champ in the country.
78:11 and Mark Patterson in 69:41. My gosh.
A North Islander taking down that title. Oof, wouldn't have gone down well.
No.
Anyway. And the 10K overall winners, Sarah Douglas, 37:28, and James Parrott, 32:10.
Goodness me. Hamner Springs, it was just cracking on. The half marathon was on there too. Hannah Oldroyd running 1:24:52, followed by Sammy Benson-Pope in 1:31:25, and Nicola Handley in 1:35:44.
And Blair McWhirter, 1:17:46. Vajan Armstrong, back up his win on the West Coast last week, was it?
Yeah.
With 1:18:15 for second, and Dave King was third in 1:20:50.
Catherine Kemp and Ben Mangin won the 10-kilometre events too.
Yeah. Look, and we often say it wouldn't be a weekend without an exterior event on Wellington.
Yeah, something different though this weekend. Yeah. Hey, they did a night run, Starlight Wainui Trail Park on Saturday night.
That looks super cool.
Yeah, so good.
Some great photos coming out of there, which you wouldn't think for nighttime, but the lights and the glow sticks and all looked really cool. So in the long course, it was Robin Leash, 1:04:52, and Walter Somerville in 57:32.
In the short course, it was Emma Kew in 39:06, and Jackson Ellridge in 36:25, and wee speedy Spike Havice was fifth.
For anyone following his progress.
He's 9 years old.
Yeah. And there was a good Q&A for International Ultra Running Association with Fiona.
Nice.
Havice. Over the weekend as well. Hey, just quickly, too, over in Australia, there was the Margaret River Ultra was on over the weekend, but it was real touch and go. It's the Cape to Cape coastline in southwest, down the bottom of Western Australia. But just over a week ago, it was on the verge of postponement because of that other COVID lockdown they had in WA. But look, they managed to get it in and it went ahead and people really took the opportunity to race. There was two course records fell in the 80K event. Yeah, so we took this from the Long Run site. The Long Run. I got my intonations wrong there. The Long Run site. Anyway, Megan Coffey smashed her 2020 second place time by almost an hour.
Ouch.
So she finished first solo female in a time of 8:24:58 for course record. Scarlett Duncan was second, also going under the previous course record in 8:39:44. And Felicity Pidgeon was third in 9:23:15.
In the men's, Victorian elite runner Matt Cran took line honours in a blitzing time of 7:15:48. Gosh, ahead of Joshua Kunn in 7:36:26. And third place Mark Hunter in 7:46:32. Crehan he took second at the 100K Surf Coast Century in December, amongst a number of other recent notable performances.
It's great to see so much racing back.
And we got a press release. We're starting to get press releases again in our email, which is quite cool.
Yeah,
there's some big racing coming up. UTA.
Yeah, yeah.
is on.
7,000 people racing over the various distances there.
When I was editing KTR, it was the fourth biggest race in the world.
Yeah. Well, they've got, so what, they've got a bunch of races. They start on the Thursday. Mm. 7,000 people. I was surprised by that.
It's huge. Bigger.
Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah. And of course, because didn't have last year, even more significant. So the Blue Mountains are going to be the place to be in Australia in a couple of weeks. It's going to be epic.
And the Tails and Trails Dog Run in Riverhead next week.
Giving it a run for its money. And the South Island Ultra next week too. Amazing.
The Nugget. Oh.
Have you done that one?
No. No, I haven't.
What's the one you did down that way? Down the Coromandel, Waikato, maybe?
I've done the Taniwha.
That's it.
Yep.
Sounds like Nugget.
I've done the
Taniwha.
You can
see how I made
times.
That mistake.
Yeah. Both of an N in them.
But
I haven't done the Nugget, but it is famous.
Yes.
It's being super hard. But I've done the Taniwha.
Sounds gold, that one. Sorry. Anyway, I think we should go move on from that.
Greatest run ever, which is the part of the show where we ask you to write into us and tell us your greatest run ever. Tell me about intonation. It doesn't have to be a race or a mountain summit. It might just be a run around the block, something that's sung to you for some reason. You can send them in to us at dirtchurchradio@gmail.com. And this is from Mitchell Hunt. And Mitchell Hunt actually features in this show because he came to the live show and he asked a question about a massage gun.
True!
Yeah! This is my greatest run ever. Running to me has always been a means of escape, a place where I disconnect and often feel untouchable and free from the chains of a clouded mind. Like many people who began running, it was done so with the intention of losing weight, and lose weight I did, from around 107 kilos to 85 kilos in approximately a year. That's a massive shift, eh? Mm. It may not seem like a huge amount, and it does seem like a huge amount in the scheme of things, given the incredible journey some people have been on, but for me, this was my journey, and I was immensely proud of myself, although I never really respected myself. This was my next task. With the confidence I gained through improving my fitness and health, I signed up for the 2021 Tarawera 102km, a challenge that caused the little butterfly in my stomach to really start partying over the coming months of training leading up to it. My brother-in-law and I set off on February the 13th at 5 a.m. out to Kawerau. My sister, who completed the 21km event that day, gave me a bag of notes and a quartz crystal the night before. 8 notes for 8 aid stations, 8 notes of encouragement from the people I care most about in my life. That's really sweet.
That's so good. Yeah.
I had no idea what to expect from this challenge. As the race began and we all meandered across the start line and settled into a smooth stride, I thought how lucky I was to be out there and carrying a body that could potentially be capable of knocking this bastard off from where I'd come from. Brought to tears at Mga Whio with the opening of the first note, I continued feeling like I had the strength of all my friends and family supporting me. A special moment came when my uncle brought my sister, her partner, and their one-year-old child over to Humphreys on his boat. My nephew has only ever known in a short but incredible life so far how to fight and push through any challenge ahead of him. I think we can probably all learn quite a lot from the way he smiles his way through whatever complications may arise. On I went, tripping and stumbling my way around to Okataina with a smile on my face, singing at the top of my voice when I thought no one was around. Welcome to the aid station by a posse of friends and family holding up signs and cheering for me. I had my little rock star entrance to Okataina and was treated like a king by my crew members before the climb I'd been thinking about all the months leading up to this event. Battling on, this was unknown. I'd never gone this far before. My body is a new territory and all I can think about is how damn grateful I am to be here, how much everyone around me cares. It's incredible that we're capable of beyond our comprehension if we smile and believe. I continued on and met crew again at the Tikitapu aid station. Fell into a dark place in the redwoods. Yeah, that's understandable. But nearing the end, I had my family bring it home with me, 6 legends and myself, hobbling the sulfur flats all the way around to the finish around 2 a.m. where I was greeted by the commentary of Matt Raymond. Yeah, I did compliment your mustache. I complimented a lot of people's mustaches, but it was sincere. Sincere mustache compliments. Anyway, it sounds selfish, and to a degree, this run gave me so much respect for myself, reminding me that I have a lot of beautiful people in my life and that I have a lovely mustache. You do have a lovely mustache. All fitting with 2021's theme of gratitude, and this was my greatest run ever. Mitchell. Wow. I do remember that, actually.
Yeah.
I absolutely do remember
2 that. 2 a.m.
Yeah. And I remember at the live show, I was like, man, that guy's got a nice mustache.
Oh.
Yeah.
How good is those 8 notes?
Yeah, and I have to say, with the quartz crystal, I mean, this is, Lily, our youngest, is so into crystals at the moment.
Oh.
Like, fully.
Yeah.
Like, heck is into crystals. And, yeah. Really kind.
Thanks, Mitchell.
Yeah.
That was, I loved hearing that and following along with you as you as you read it out, but as you wrote it.
Absolutely. Mitchell.
Yeah, brilliant. So thank you to you and to the rest of you. Send them in. We love them. Everyone loves them. And they are a great part of our community. They've kind of grown into a life of their own, really, haven't
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right, let's crack on with the live show. Look, we don't really have much to say because we say it all at the top and we introduce everyone and everything, but suffice to say, you will learn a bunch if you listen to this. A lot of different things came out that we hadn't really seen coming. We'd talked about what questions to ask beforehand, but we really left it up to our amazing panelists to come up with the answers, and they sure did. So without further ado, here is the DCR Sports Lab live show.
Well, kia ora tato. My name is Matt Raymond, and welcome to this special live edition of Dirt Church Radio in association with Sports Lab and kindly facilitated by Halitau Tap House.
Welcome along. So I'm Eugene Bingham, and it's great to see you all here. Isn't it great to be bucking the trend of the last 12 months being socially isolated, to be out here and enjoying a night out? So we have a great night planned, talking to some experts here.
This was an event we originally, this has been over a year in the making, we originally wanted to do this with Sports Lab, I think the week that we went into level 4 lockdown. So 2 or 3 days beforehand we were panicking. It was literally on again, off again. I think you self-isolated, I'd self-isolated, Andrew was at least self-isolation curious, and here we are a year later. So incredible. And you know, it's really great to be here on Karangahape Road, which is a place that iwi have used for hundreds of years. So this was a main thoroughfare. So it kind of feels almost that we're in the central city, that we're almost on a historical trail, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, you could say it was New Zealand's first, Aotearoa's first running trail, perhaps, right by our side here. But look, it's also, you know, as we said, great to be along here with Sports Lab crew. We love Sports Lab. They love us, except for, and here's a pro tip, if you get asked to go on the treadmill to do a gait analysis, don't wear muddy trail shoes. They don't like that, all right? So don't do that. But apart from that, they really like us, and we love them. And it's wonderful to see so many familiar faces here, both staff, but also people that we've seen in the reception area, usually hobbling around like we are, because, you know, we're always on the road to recovery, aren't we?
Well, I mean, we're never off that road to recovery. And, I'm sure you all know, and I'm probably the only person in this room, I don't know, I've not been to Sports Lab, I apologise for that. I've booked
never in, injured, never once injured.
No, ironclad, just, yeah, a perfect specimen. But we're really pleased to have these three people here. And if those of you who don't know, Sports Lab is a multidisciplinary kind of hub for recovery and well-being.
Mm. But another thing we love about Sports Lab is their commitment to community. For example, this event tonight and the runs that they do and the stuff that they share on, you know, bringing us all together in so many different ways. Last year, as we were preparing for this show that never happened, Hannah Sirikki, who was supposed to be on the panel, and I'm sure many of you know her, that she's off on parental leave. Talk about things change in a year, don't they, Hannah? She said, look, in this time of coronavirus, we really need to commit to community. And I think we've seen a lot of that this year, haven't we, Matt?
Yeah, absolutely. And it feels like people are really kind of keyed up for getting out and getting amongst it and coming together. And that's evidenced by tonight. It's great to see you all here. So thank you all very much for turning up. We couldn't do this without you. We wouldn't do this without you.
We'd just be two dorks sitting in a bar.
Or two dorks sitting in your bedroom, which is with his wife going banging on the door going, I want to go to bed. And the neighbours going, what are those guys doing every Monday night? Like every Monday night, they stand there talking at the wall because they can't. Yeah, it's hectic and it looks bad.
It does.
But anyway, this is a much better environment. We should get into it, though,
We
right?
should. Look, we're going to be covering off a bunch of topics tonight, from injury prevention to just the physiology of running and endurance sports, and how key point, how road running and trail running fit together. I'm keen to find out about that.
Yeah, never the twain shall meet, really. So look, on the panel tonight, first we have Lauren Abel, who's a podiatrist, an outdoors lover and a dancer, graduated with a Bachelor of Health Science majoring in podiatry and has continued education since, particularly interested in biomechanics and has worked in technical running store performing gait analysis and fittings. Her main passion has been ballet, which she performs and has taught. So thank you for coming along tonight, Lauren.
Next up, Luke McCallum in the middle there. He's a massage therapist and runner. He holds a Bachelor of Health Studies in Massage and Neuromuscular Therapy with two diplomas in health science as well. He's worked with a range of athletes from sort of elites to weekend warriors. Luke is he's a speedster of a runner himself when he's not injured. Yeah. And he's competed internationally and at the highest levels domestically for cross-country running. So welcome along, Luke.
Thank you.
Wow, physician, heal thyself. Hey, so Vaughan Craddock is a physiotherapist and the director of Sports Lab, Bachelor of Health Science, physiotherapy from AUT, and I understand that you won the Academic Prize for Clinical Excellence.
I gave it away.
There you go. Special interest again in running biomechanics and running injuries, but has worked with many other various sports. During his running career, specialised in cross-country, track and field, representing Aotearoa three times, and you now coach a group of track and field athletes that compete at an elite level, as well as people doing 100-milers and all sorts of races.
Welcome along, Vaughan.
Welcome along.
Who would be stupid enough to do a 100-mile race, eh? Let's get into it. Okay, first topic. And we thought we'd start with the basics, really. We're all about running. All terrain, all distances. But if there's one thing that almost that transcends all running, really, it's endurance and the need for endurance. So how do we improve our endurance to be able to sustain our pace for longer? What helps us do that? Can we perhaps have an explanation of the physiology of endurance running? What is happening in our bodies? You know, what's going on? What's really making us run well, and how does it all work together? And I'm going to throw that one to Vaughan first up.
I'm glad you start with an easy one. Well, I think disclaimer here, it's not an easy one. From my perspective, that's probably best answered by saying it's a complex interaction of many variables. So if we try and break it down, I would probably see it four different ways, endurance. You've got your physiological, you've got your physical, you've got your neurological, and then you've got your psychological. So most people would probably leave that psychological part off, but I actually think it's really important, because if you're talking about endurance, it's not just about what you're doing in training, it's also what you're doing in racing. So you can take that a bit further and say, okay, what's the physiological? Well, we've got the real basic stuff that we all know about, you know, like we build muscle mass, we get more capillaries, but there's some centrally driven things that are probably quite complex that we don't know about that are quite important. But the good thing is they come from simple things like just getting out and hitting the miles and doing the easy stuff. So if we want to know about the complex, we can go there, but probably the simple drives the complex.
We like the complex.
Okay.
What's the complex?
Well, so if we're talking about centrally mediated stuff, we're talking about we're going to get more hormonal drive, okay? We're going to get temperature regulation, which is really important for endurance, because obviously we generate a lot of temperature as we burn energy to create locomotion. So if we can't tolerate that temperature, we start to sort of like peter out. We get, you know, lower heart rate, more blood volume, more plasma, and that means we get the ability to go for longer before we start to conk.
So endurance training is about improving each of those systems, finding ways to more efficiently be able to do those things better.
Yeah, absolutely. And the great thing is all of those complex mechanisms just come from doing the simple things, like getting out, putting one foot in front of the other as often as you can.
Well, Luke, is there anything that you want to add to what Vaughan has just said there, partly so that we can test the mics and see how it's going down the back there?
I would go to say that there are a lot of different elements of training that people could do. I think one thing that happens quite a lot with runners is they just want to run, and I think that they will constantly just go, I need to hit, you know, like a certain number of kilometres or a certain number of miles in order to, you know, have some form of success. Often that's you kind of some arbitrary number of, like, 100 kilometers or something like that. But for whatever reason, someone decided that that is the perfect number. Personally, I think that's something that is kind of, it's not overly relevant, and everyone's an individual. And so you should also pretty much be looking at what is the kind of, well, when you approach training, what is the things that you're wanting to get out of it? And when it comes down to it, consistency is actually the most important element of training, and everyone should have a completely individualized way of getting that consistency. With an aerobic base, there are so many different ways apart from just running. For those that know me, I aqua jog a lot, and everyone kind of goes, aqua jogging, I hate it. But for most people, they do that when they're injured. But if you're using it as a way to be consistent with what you're trying to do, it actually is a really good way to build that endurance.
Yeah. And Lauren, you've got a dance background, and dancers also have to have a lot of endurance. So can you explain, maybe there's some similarities, some differences in the way that, or maybe some things that runners should think about that you bring from a dance perspective?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess with like a fundamental level across all disciplines, as you build up the amount of time you spend doing an activity, whether it's running, dancing, whatever it may be, I feel as though you should be building up the amount of conditioning and the things you're doing outside of that discipline to enhance the ability you have within it. So people often think, like what Luke said about building up to say, 100K, 100 miler, along with that build, we should be thinking about building up our effort that we put outside of that specific event.
I've got a question for everyone here. Who's really shit at recovery? Show of hands, I'll put my hand up to that. Like, who is, oh, you're like, oh, no, come on, you either are or you aren't. You're either one of those people who, yeah. So recovery, like, we're building up our endurance, we're getting into our work. How do we, I mean, what is an ideal state of recovery? Because, I mean, if you go by this computer that most of us wear on our wrist now, it's so arbitrary, right? Like, it'll say 20 hours until your next run, and then you could turn it on, go for a 2-minute run, it'll go run as normal. I mean, how do you build recovery into a training plan?
Well, it's a super complex conversation where I think that probably where I'd start is when people think of recovery, they always have to have the sense of needing to do something. And so they kind of go, I need to like foam roll, I need to feel something, I need to have like a massage gun, and I want to feel something, and or I need to stretch, and I need to have this deep stretch. Where in reality, the way that I look at it, the best type of recovery is when you're almost doing nothing. The way that I look at that is when you look at something like sleep. Sleep is kind of the pivotal moment of where we're doing the best recovery that we possibly can do. And so often, most people would have heard that you might be, oh, you should sleep for about 8 hours for the most part every night. And when you hear that, you kind of go, oh, you know, maybe get close if you're lucky. But I would go to say with most people who do any form of like increased exercise, that 8 hours is that kind of, that's that average person doing the average amount of everything. And so if you're doing more, something like sleep actually increases in importance. So that would be what I would add to recovery, and what I see as being probably fundamentally the most important thing.
I want to talk about foam rolling because it sounds so simple. You're saying just actually get some quality sleep. I mean, you talked about foam rolling. How badly do people abuse themselves on a foam roller? What's the worst sort of foam roller related injury you've seen?
I'll be controversial. Well, depending
on
your
controversial.
Do it.
I'd probably go say your IT band.
Yeah.
To be honest. Foam rolling your IT band, so the outside of your thigh. The primary reason is with your IT band, it is something that doesn't necessarily have a large amount of contractile ability to it, but it does have a lot of muscles that attach into the IT band. And so the way that people are approaching it is kind of should be starting looking up around what is the thing overload, or what are the different muscles that are, or the way that you move, overloading something that's getting sore, rather than going, I'm sore here, so I'm just going to push really hard here.
Which sounds, now you say it out loud, quite counterintuitive. But it's something that we all do, right? Like, we think about, oh, like, I'll get in and I'll massage that muscle. I'll do, you know, what we're going to do. All right.
Mm. Is there anything else in terms of that sort of recovery that we should be thinking of, Lauren or Vaughan?
Well, I think with recovery, one of the big things is to know whether you're a fast or a slow adapter. If you're someone who adapts to your training really quick, you're going to need way more recovery, because we all kind of sit on a continuum. Some of us sit at the higher end where we adapt really fast. Some of us sit at the lower end where we have to do a lot more training to get the training stimulus. And some of us are, you know, in the middle. People that get the training stimulus adaptations really quickly actually need probably up to 2 or 3 times more rest, because otherwise they'll over-adapt. So people that go a bit slower, they need that continuity of time so they can get away with less rest. So it's knowing where you sit on that continuum. And it's also about knowing whether your body is ready to go again. So, Matt, you used the example of your watch. It's a good example, but it's not going to be right for everyone, because you don't know where you sit on that algorithm's averages. But you can use it as a starting point and then go from there and refine it based on your sort of like biofeedback. So if it says 15 hours and you go out and you run the next time 15 hours later and you feel like rubbish, probably that's not your average. Add a little bit to it and just start adjusting from there. So just using your common sense to use these apps and these like third-party things is actually a really good tool to know how to customize your recovery.
Just, Luke, you spent time in Kenya and you came on Dirt Church Radio and talked about that a little bit. But what did you see there in terms of how much how much effort they put into recovery running in E10?
I mean, I'll put it simply. Elite athletes, their job is to train. And I think for the large proportion of people who are running, most people carry a full-time job or something along those lines, like whether it's, you know, studying or whatnot. And so the amount of stress that someone is, their body has been put under is quite different. And so for the most part, over in Kenya, people would train relatively early in the morning and then late in the afternoon as well, and they would sleep in the middle of the day. They would be going to bed as soon as it gets dark and kind of waking up. And it's so their whole life is actually around recovery. And if when talking to most elite athletes, it's kind of one of the biggest changes that they see, that once they start taking it seriously, the added benefit to their performance, no matter what that performance is, actually came from having the ability to train or have better quality training because they had better quality recovery.
Mm, okay. We're going to change topic now to injury prevention. And we're going to start with Lauren. We're going to ask each of our panelists for one bit of advice from each of their fields about something that runners can do or should do to try and prevent injury. So to try and get ahead of the curve, as it were, try and stop the onset of injury. So we'll start with Lauren, just a bit of advice that you've got for us.
Yeah, so I guess coming from podiatry point of things, it's always going to be shoes is a massive part of that, and ensuring that you're getting your shoes fitted and that the type of shoes that you're wearing is right for either what you're doing or your foot function or shape or sizing. So what's happening recently is a lot of change within each model. So people are often used to just replacing the model as it comes out every year, but we know that what's happening is they're changing the materials within those shoes, but also the shaping that they base those shoes off. So instead of just assuming that shoe is still the right thing for you, making sure that you're going in, trying them on, how do they feel, and has any feature changed from them, and making sure you're staying ahead of that and not replacing them and putting yourself at risk because actually they're not the same thing that they used to be, or your foot has changed within that time as well.
Right. Luke?
For the most part, the one thing that I think is the most important is having an understanding of why you're doing what you're doing. I think when you're doing things at home, you kind of, for the most part, most people will approach it in the way of, as I said before, if you're sore here, I'm going to push here. And often it might help with a little bit of symptom relief, but when it comes down to it, you, in order to get improvement or kind of like make it from stop happening in the future, having a good understanding, but also critically analysing why you're doing what you're doing so you can kind of apply that to other areas of the body is really important. Mm. Now, I think there are a lot of different things that runners or just athletes in general will do, will just do them because everyone else does them, without actually necessarily understanding what is the reason why you do it. Because if you understand that reason, it is a lot easier to apply it to other elements of the body and what you're looking forward to.
And your why can't just be because you saw it on Instagram.
Don't get me started.
Vaughan?
I think for me it's about whatever you do, try and be proactive rather than reactive. So that might be a case of just taking a break when you don't think you need one. You know, so don't wait until you're toast. You know, make sure you stay on the good side of feeling good by taking a rest proactively. There might be seeking an opinion on something that just seems like a niggle before it's got big. Or it might be picking up a new skill like learning to breathe well. You know, because if that's going to aid recovery, you don't know that how much it's going to help until after you've done it. So that's more of a proactive thing. Whereas if you wait till you've got an injury and, you know, you've got a 3-month layoff, you're going to be trying everything you can. But if you try a couple of things before that and they don't work, you haven't wasted any time. So it's not a waste of time to trial things before you've got a problem. Yeah, be proactive.
Seems like you guys are actively trying to put yourself out of business.
Yeah.
that approach. Shouldn't you just like buy the shoe, buy the Pegasus 36 and this 37 and just run through everything? Speaking of, you know, like getting back on the horse after a race, or whatever brand, sorry, Nike, whatever brand... There'll be a drone now hovering over us. Whatever race that you're going to do or event that you're going to do, is there a golden period of recovery? How long should you take before you get back out on the horse? Is doing 200-mile races in 3 weeks a good idea? Or 2 half marathons in 3 weeks, is that a good idea?
I mean, there's 2 different questions here. So you've, I mean, 100-mile race, that's a long time, right? And so, I mean, I've never done one, but... For the most part, I think recovery after a race, it is, again, I mean, it's annoying when you say this, but it comes down to the individual. And so it kind of depends on, you know, how the race went, how your training went in the lead up to it. Often when I talk to people about how they are feeling afterwards, I kind of would almost go, once you start to feel good, you should still wait a little bit. You kind of, like, wait a week. You kind of should really be... mentally and emotionally really excited to get back into training, because if you're not there and excited, it's kind of just gonna, like, that's a big part of it. And so if you go, oh, I have to do it because that's just what I do, it probably is a good sign that you haven't quite recovered yet.
Or if my Strava graph is going down for training month to month, and I look and I'll say, you're 14% less fit than you were a month ago. It's probably not a good reason.
No.
But those are the things that we're surrounded by now in the modern world as runners, right? Like, you see the older men and women who would run in pre-GPS watch days, you know, like the first people who were... Granddad over here is getting a bit triggered. But
I can hear you now.
Yeah, I know you can, Eugene. But, like, no, I mean that. Like, it seems like we're confounded everywhere we turn with sort of these, both of these things that limit us, but also that kind of are pushing us out the door. What do you think's behind that?
I mean, I think it's technology, right? And it's kind of one of those things that we love, and it's great to be able to track different things, but sometimes it starts to override the inability to have this internal feeling of, or understanding of, just sit back and think what you like, how do you feel? And I think that is probably the key. I mean, I'd use the example all the time where it's like, I'm an athlete myself, but I'm also a massage therapist, and I make the joke fairly frequently where I go, my athlete brain and my practitioner brain, they don't talk to each other, they're completely different. And so it's not an issue that kind of... Oh, it's an issue that everybody experiences, but learning to listen to what's going on it's really hard. And so sometimes it is good to have things that can help track and measure and tell you what's going on, but it also is really important to actually just sit back and go, how do I feel? Yeah.
Lauren, do you see people sort of still hobbling or, you know, carrying injuries, and then heading into races when you know that they shouldn't be? How hard is it to have a conversation with someone and say, hey, you know, you should back off a bit? Or, you know, how do you have those conversations, and how often do you have to have those conversations?
Yeah, look, quite a bit, but I guess it's usually trying to get them to realise that themselves. I mean, we know, particularly if it's a foot or ankle injury, that's carrying a lot of weight with every step when you're running. So it's usually a bit of sort of gentle education, and they'll come to that realisation themselves, and it's the bigger picture usually, you know, saying, well, what are your goals? And being able to look past this race that's coming up, an event, whatever it may be, and actually looking after whatever it may be, but in podiatry's case, foot and ankle health, and saying, look, we want you to be functioning for the rest of your season. So sometimes it's, yeah, just letting them know what the implications can be of pushing past certain injuries. And they'll often come to that themselves, that, okay, yeah, we need to do something about it, and whether that's treatment, time off, or actually postponing that race and looking forward to the next one to be able to complete that quite happily.
What if people don't get the hint? Have you ever, as practitioners, I mean, because some people don't get the hint, right? No, they're like, no, I've signed up for this.
Yeah.
I've got to get my belt buckle or my medal or whatever it is. Have you ever had to, get, you know, from a duty of professional standards and duty of care, have you ever had to give a hard no to anyone?
Absolutely. Yeah. No. And sometimes it's actually giving them the hard facts, and they'll make their mind up on their own. I mean, you can't always make that decision for them, but letting them know exactly what will happen or is likely to happen if they do continue with that race, and then that's on them. But usually once they know that, they'll actually come to that realisation themselves that, no, that's not worth it. There's a lot beyond that race coming up.
There is also a hidden cupboard at Sports Day where they have a dart gun. And if it comes down to it, they'll just, yeah, see you, bye. And then in the car park, you go, oh, what's that? You know, yeah, that's how it happens, apparently. Yeah.
Look, you wake up on Tuesday like,
missed that race.
Okay, look, next topic. As we said, lots of people who listen to the podcast are trail runners, but we're about all terrain. We like running on all sorts of terrain. And we're particularly interested in how running on other types of terrain can actually help us as trail runners. So maybe, Vaughan, particularly road running. How can road running help trail runners? And is it a good idea to mix it up and perhaps spend a bit of time on the road? Controversially, please don't throw anything at me.
Or walk out.
Well, I guess just to please the crowd, the first thing to say is you just can't go past running on the terrain you're going to race on, right? You've got to spend some quality time getting yourself ready. But, of course, there is some bonuses to using other terrains. So I guess it depends on what your training regime as to what terrains you're going to use. If you're only training long and slow and steady all the time, you're probably not going to do too much running on the track. Probably don't need to. But if you're trying to mix it up and make sure that all the different elements of your body's physiology are stimulated and topped up, then you're going to use different surfaces to do different types of sessions. You know, if you're trying to run fast, you don't want to be running on a slippery, unstable surface. It's a lot easier to get fit on a smooth surface, right? But it's also a lot easier to get injured. So one of the pros of running on terrain that's lumpy and bumpy like off-road is the variation of landing keeps your body healthier, but it's really taxing on some of your tendons, so that could be an injury risk. So you might want to strengthen your tendons having a little bit of time on more predictable surfaces and work on some of your VO2 systems on that, and then go and do your sport specific training in the weekends out on the train. The other thing to mention as well is, unless you guys live up at Halitau, as you guys do, you probably
we're not in the bar all the
time. That's not what I heard. It's not what I heard.
Just to clarify.
You just can't get out on the trails every day. I mean, Auckland's pretty good. You know, Wellington's better. Like, other places are better. But, like, you've got to mix it up. Otherwise, you're just not going to run more than twice a week.
What about gravel running? At Riverhead, for instance, there's a lot of gravel roads. Is that road running or trail running?
No, it's got to be trail running.
See, we've had other people say, other coaches say, it's road running. So why is it not Why is gravel road running more trail running than road running?
For me?
Oh, yeah.
Because it's unstable.
Right.
To me, anything that's road running is a uniform surface, right? So you hit the ground, it's the same strike every time, it's the same forces going up your body. That's why if you're running a marathon, when you hit the wall, you hit the wall, because it's the same muscles doing the same work all the time. In an ultra or in a trail run, when you hit the wall, you just run out of energy. Your body just doesn't want to tick over anymore. It's not a particular part of your body that's been smoked. It's not your quads, possibly. Might be if there's lots of downhill, but you're dissipating force around your body, and it's more about your engine. So for me, gravel would be trail. Yeah.
If there's been one topic that's dominated running news this past year, apart from race cancellations, it's shoes. And we've seen some wacky stuff, right? Sometimes you don't even recognise that it's actually a running shoe. Lauren, I just wondered if you could talk us through some of these developments that we're seeing, what we're seeing, what shoe manufacturers are trying to do, and perhaps some of the things that we should try and avoid or be aware of as we reach for the latest and greatest just because it looks great or, you know, it's getting Eliud Kipchoge to run 2 hours.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess we've seen, if I was to summarise, two main things. We've seen a really big change in the foams that all of the footwear companies are using. They're all trying to engineer sort of the lightest, most cushioned foam that they can. But to be able to use that efficiently, they're also incorporating it into this rocker sole design. So this is the biggest thing that we've seen over the last wee bit. And I guess when we see these trends coming up, and they obviously fluctuate over time, the challenges to actually assess, is this something that I'm going to benefit from? And that's something that we should all, yeah, take a step back, have a look at the shoe, think, what is this going to do in terms of our function? And if I was to summarise, say, a cushion rocker shoe, that's going to do a few things. So it's typically going to help on those...
Sorry, for those who don't know, can you explain what rocker is?
Yes.
Because it used to be all about drop, right? And now we're hearing this term rocker. So what is...
Obviously,
we're rockers, totally, fully rockers, but... Yeah, in a more technical term. Thank you, Eugene.
So I guess if I was to explain that simply, if we were to put a shoe on a flat surface, a rocker shoe would have less point of contact at the front and the back end of the shoe. So instead of you moving and running on that shoe and actually having to propel yourself, those lifts at the heel and toe are going to allow you, like a moon boot, to rock over and push off with less joint range of motion and less effort, essentially.
Right. Yeah. So it's like a banana.
Exactly. Yeah, okay. Yep, just like a banana.
That's Occam's razor, for those who don't know. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's what we've seen a lot of. And that's, like I said, going to do a few things. It's going to change your biomechanics. It is going to take load out of the range of motions your joints are going to have to do, but it's also therefore going to load up different muscles. So the reasons that I'd suggest people to go into that type of shoe would be if they've got a real restriction at their big toe joint would be a main one, and those are the types of people that have probably struggled with finding the right shoe for them. I also mentioned the cushioning that the foam's going to provide, and for those sort of longer endurance runs, that's where you may benefit from being a little higher off the ground and having a bit more assistance with that shock absorption. It's probably where you're going to appreciate it, but yeah, it's not going to suit everyone is the main thing to consider.
And what about this kind of new thing about carbon fiber plates in shoes? You know, many of you will have seen that YouTube with a guy throws the shoe at the table and it bounces off. I mean, for a normal human being, do they have any benefit?
Typically, no.
Crushing.
If we say normal is average, meaning average speed, then no. Carbon plates are typically going to benefit that real upper level in terms of speed, where any small enhancement is going to make a difference to their time. So for a normal average person, I'd stay away. Yeah.
Are you guys, any of you in each of your disciplines, seeing injuries from these new types of shoes? Is that something that can happen?
Absolutely, yeah. So that's where I say, you know, don't always follow the trend. So with that cushion, that rocker, we are going to be higher off the ground. You're going to have a lot more stack height. And if you're someone that's had a long history of, say, lateral ankle sprains, absolutely. You're going to be put in a pretty vulnerable position being a lot higher off the ground. And with it being such a cushion base, you're going to have to do a lot more work to stabilize those ankles. So if you're on uneven terrain, then yeah, it's something to stay away from. And that's something that I have seen quite a lot of, is people just following the trend, but actually that's not the shoe for them. That's going to place them at a greater risk for many reasons.
And the other one that we're starting to see is the real pronounced rudder on the back. I mean, there's a shoe model, have you seen that one, that you can't actually drive in? Like, they advise, like, this thing sticks out. Have you seen any, like, any injuries from that?
I haven't actually. I haven't seen that many people in them. I think that's the thing, is people don't really want to try anything out that's that different. That's just something that I've noticed clinically. But so no, I wouldn't say I've noticed anyone get injuries, but that's not necessarily a shoe thing, just a lack of shoe wearing, because I can't really comment on that.
Cool.
Look, with COVID, we know that we've all become experts at creating sourdough. And
naming your sourdough starter.
Yes.
Has anyone named their sourdough starter in lockdown due to sheer boredom?
Just you. No?
Yeah. Clint Eastwood.
And we all learnt a new language, didn't we? Every one of us in here. We all used our time. We finished every single series on Netflix. But one thing we should probably have been doing as runners is building new skills outside of running specific, which will help us become better runners. So we're going to go around the panel and get them to perhaps come up with something from their field. Maybe it's a biomechanical skill, maybe it's a psychological thing that we could learn, but something, a practice or a routine that we could pick up that will help us become a better runner. Do you want to start with Luke?
Skills, I think, are really, really important. Probably the skill that I would say is overriding, probably the most important, would be the skill of creating a routine to do with any form of kind of injury prevention or recovery. What I see clinically, it's something that people just go, I just can't fit it into my lifestyle. And I think that's probably the one thing that did change a little bit with kind of the different lockdowns, is people go, I actually do have time. And by having a bit of routine in it, to be honest, I don't think that it needs to be like an hour of doing something every day. I think it's, if you can come up with work with someone to come up with a few key things that are going to make the most difference, and do that regularly, almost, you know, five, six, seven times a week, that'll actually make more of a difference than go, I've got 1 hour a week to do all my recovery and then I'm not going to think about it until next week. So, yeah, the regularity and the routine is the skill that I think is
building it into the regularity.
Yeah.
Because it's always the first thing that drops off, isn't it? Like, you've got a limited spend. Most of us have a limited spend every day. You know, some days it's most people around an hour to fit in somewhere. And if you've got that limited spend, it's always something that's going to drop off first day.
Yeah, but I also got to say that, like, if you've got, say, an hour, you know, sometimes there is some benefit of going, I'm just going to, you know, run for 55 minutes and I'm going to spend that 5 minutes to do something for recovery. And 5 minutes of training, like, you're never going to go for a 5 minute run. So 5 minutes isn't actually all that much time, but the benefit of doing something for 5 minutes could actually be quite profound.
I want a further question with that, because, I mean, I don't know about anyone here, but amongst our friend group, we had a term called straight up the Dave. We have a friend, his name's Dave, and if we were going to run a 21K run, we were going to run a 21K run. If we were going to run for 2 hours, we would run for 2 hours. You know, he would be up and down the car park, you know, straight over the gate, away into the distance. And when you were in Kenya, hanging out with all those professional athletes, you know, people who train for a living, I mean, this sounds like I'm setting myself up for, you know, you can swing at the fences. is it like if they're given a 2-hour run and they finish 3 minutes early, are these people like doing laps of the car park or to watch or that rigid in terms of time?
No. the probably the best way to put it is over there people are training really, really hard and they're often actually training almost to failure, which is not something that I would recommend. They kind of almost have this mentality of boom or bust, like I'm going to make it or I'm not. And there are a number of different reasons as to why they approach it that way. They're trying to make it, and effectively when it comes down to it, they're trying to make money. And I think that is a key fundamental difference between your average person, because the running is something that you enjoy. Over there, I would question if they enjoy it, to be honest. And so that's where I would go, yeah, it's that kind of, yeah, trying to make it, and it's not overly a sustainable model of training.
Right.
I can't believe that they haven't, that Straight Up the Dave hasn't made it to Kenya. That's
Straight Up the Dave.
Quite shocking. Anyway, on with the, back to our one thing. Lauren, what do you suggest?
So I guess going to feet, it would be having awareness of your feet. I mean, we often think about what everything in the body is feeling like, but your feet are going to be a massive part of feedback to your body system. So a simple thing that I'd say to try out is toe switches. Some of you might have done that before, but if you have your feet flat on the ground, are you able to lift your big toe in isolation of your little toes and vice versa? It's going to do a few things. It's going to help to activate some of the muscles under your foot, help strengthen your feet, and that's going to improve balance, not just within your feet, but like I said, that feedback to the rest of your body to help you be as sort of stabilised and looked after as possible from bottom up.
Just asking for a friend. If you can't do that.
It is tricky. And that's where I guess sometimes we get these blockages, and I say it's like you have faulty connection sometimes because your toes or your feet get so used to working in this inefficient way. That's where you need some help. And I'll never send someone home if I'm asking them to do that and they can't do it. I'm never going to send them home and say, just keep working on it, because it's likely it's a connection issue. So it's working around that, starting with more basic movements and slowly building a connection around that faulty one is sort of how I'd describe that, yeah.
Luke, I'd just like to remind you about client privilege, you know, just, asking for a friend. That's all, okay.
We'll call him Nugent.
and Vaughan, one bit of advice about something, a skill that we could learn or something that we should pick up.
So for me, it would probably be breathing. It's such a foundational thing to wellness, but most of us just do it really poorly. I think the stats are something stupid, like 95% of us just can't breathe properly. So you don't have to breathe perfectly. That's what puts most people off, I think. You've just got to be a little bit better than you were before. And its effects are so wide ranging, you know, like it helps to help us to heal faster, you know. It actually will stretch out some of the muscles that you find that you're on the foam roller just wincing, you know, like your hip flexors, your adductors, because there's an interconnectivity between that tissue. I think breathing would be a really important thing. But often you're going to probably need to go and talk to someone or jump on YouTube and just find a little bit of skill sets out. But if you want to give it a go yourself to start with, just try and slow your breathing rate down and see if you can breathe into your back. Because most of us breathe into our stomach thinking that's going to increase our diaphragmatic breath. But the reality is you can push your stomach in and out without holding or making your breath. So the one thing that can't happen unless you're diaphragmatically breathing is the back of your rib cage moving up and out like a bucket handle. So if you're lying on your tummy and you can breathe into your back and you can feel some stretching and some pressure, you can be pretty assured that you're breathing into your diaphragm. So that's a good starting place.
It's interesting, isn't it, that so many people, breathe really, really shallow, and I'm certainly one of those people and have done in the past. I think I'm better at it. But, we've got some social media questions. And the first one there was one about – no, you featured quite heavily, bro. Like, you did.
And you asked for this.
Yeah, so you were like, hey, any social media questions about Luke McCallum? No, it wasn't like that, but there was a few, which we've edited them out. But anyway, massage guns. Seems like everywhere you look on social media, there's these massage guns. People use them. Are they good? Would you recommend them? Or are they just another pathway to longer-term injury?
So it depends on what you're looking at. When I talk about recovery, I talk about things like trying to calm your whole nervous system down. And I think that is fundamentally the most important thing. And that's what recovery is. Any form of percussion or kind of fast stimulation is actually excitatory to the nervous system, and it's helping prepare your body for effectively exercise. I would almost go to say that I think something like a massage gun can or is quite good before you do training. Afterwards, I would go, apart from it feels good, I think that's probably my approach to it. I think the timing is a little bit off where people use it, to be honest.
Right, so they should almost be using it prior to exercise rather than after.
Yeah. Which is completely different to most forms of marketing that comes out around massage guns. So I do recognise that as well.
Right. Okay. So it's that excitatory thing. What about those boots that blow up with air? And they look like sausages.
I'm a big fan.
Cool. That was not a loaded question. Yeah. It's a genuine question. So
I wouldn't know the science, but like anecdotally, I can say that for me, it makes a big difference. I think the basic science is that if you add compression to anything, it aids whatever that other thing you're doing. So if you put ice with compression, the effect of the ice is more beneficial. So it aids venous return, supposedly. Does it? I don't know. I feel better afterwards. My legs feel lighter, fresher. You know. So
have you tried it? You've used them?
Yeah, I mean the three times I've exercised this year. I would suggest not using the arms and the legs at the same time. It makes your head feel a bit of pressure.
You just get squeezed out the top.
How do you factor in someone's sex into recovery? Now, and by sex, I mean the gender they were assigned at birth.
Well, it's a very complicated question, to be honest. I think we have someone that works for us, Claire Badenhorst, who's a sports physiologist, and she would be the primary person to talk to about something like this. I think, yeah, it's important to know that there's difference. Your hormones are different, and often there is a lot of conversation at the moment around training, especially among females, about training to your cycle and how that makes a difference. Males are kind of a little bit more consistent within what their hormones are. I would just say it's different. It's with different without going into the science of it. And if it is something that you're really wanting to approach, yeah, talk to Claire.
There's a great quote that sort of summarises that. It says that women are not just little men. So I think,
yeah,
there is differences. I mean, there's obviously similarities as well, but I think everyone knows the basics. The basics are going to cover those similarities. It's the differences where you probably need that extra help.
Lauren? Do you have any, in terms of feet, is it just a foot is a foot is a foot?
No, but in terms of that question, I think it would be sort of out of the out of the answer, really. I think those two summarise that pretty well.
Fantastic. And I've got it. This is honest to God. Didn't make this up. How can you tell if you should just run through an injury or take time off to recover?
I mean, as an athlete and as a clinician, never a good idea. Because I think the thing is it's without knowing what it is, how are you going to know what damage it's going to cause? I think most people are looking at running as it's something that adds so much value to their lifestyle, and it kind of almost becomes a bit of their personality. It's kind of a badge of honour. And sometimes by trying to run through something, it can put someone out for quite a long time. And I think the risk of being injured for a long period of time is actually can be quite detrimental to someone's health a lot further than, you know, like a bit of a sore knee. And so I think it's always better to play it on the side of caution, or as Vaughan said before, take that preventative approach and kind of check things out really early. I would always go, I mean, what are you going to get out of it for the most part? Like, unless you're at the Olympics trying to get gold, like, what's the benefit?
I agree with Luke. I think that there's a couple of benchmarks you can use, though, if you want something objective. You know, if you're getting out the door and you're a bit stiff and sore and you feel better through the run, you probably should keep going, you know. But if it's getting worse during the course of the run, well, maybe it's a warning sign. But not everything has to be a catastrophe. But if you get that same symptom 3 days in a row, there's probably something going on you want to get checked out, you know. And if it's escalating during a run, you probably want to get that checked out sooner. Yeah.
Over the course of your careers, have you noticed that, are we getting better at injury prevention or are we getting worse? I know it's probably hard to judge, but think about how long you've been doing it. You know, there's and lots of factors go into that marketing. What is it fashionable in terms of running, and what is a badge of honour, what's not? Yeah, are we getting better or worse?
I think people are more interested in it, so that's a good thing.
I mean, I would probably go to say the most, one of the biggest learnings from the past year is that people go, oh, it's maybe it's kind of a good thing to take a step back. And I kind of go, like, people have started to think, oh, maybe my health is a little bit more important than maybe I had kind of thought about it before. And so, I mean, if we were to talk about the last year, I mean, I think there's been a massive shift in a lot of people's minds around what is important. And I would go to, like, you turn up to an event and there's a lot more people at most of these events. And so people are actually being a lot more active, and they're kind of coinciding with that go, how do I continue doing this newfound love that I've come across?
Again, asking for a friend. The trepidation that some people feel, Lauren, is they feel that if they approach a professional, that there's going to be, oh, you've got to stop running, you've got to stop doing what you're doing. But that's often not the case, is it? Sometimes it's a matter of managing an injury as well as still being able to keep doing what you're doing.
Absolutely. I mean, where possible, I always want to keep my clients moving and running and active. That's always the goal. So I never want people to think that if they seek out help, that means they're going to have to stop. It often means that actually they have a higher chance of being able to keep active because they're being, like we've, you know, said, proactive. They're getting on top of things a little bit earlier than usual, whereas maybe in the past they've had a bad experience because they've left it too late. So no, definitely not. That's not always the case. It's case by case basis, but the earlier you get things looked into, then the better chance you have, really, of being able to keep doing what you love doing.
I would echo that, and I think actually in certain circumstances, you can use running as your main form of rehabilitation. You know, so as long as you've got that advice to know that that's a safe option, what's a better way of conditioning your body for running than running? You know, like, you can only do so many calf raises before your brain explodes. You know, so
is that a thing?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think also when you use both of the I think. We call it tissue loading, right? So when we come back from an injury, we start slow. And what do? We don't go and spend 6 hours in the gym. We start off conditioning our body to running. So it's a plyometric exercise, particularly if you're trail running. Okay, I think that's really important to understand. Like, so if you're not going to get out and test yourself plyometrically, you're not conditioning your body to be fit for purpose. So you don't take a Toyota Corolla and go and do rally carring in it. You put a different suspension on it, you know, or maybe you do, but you put a different suspension on it. It's the same thing with running. You know, you don't just do your 6 calf raises and your body's ready to go. You've got to actually use it for purpose. So what better way to do that than running in the right conditions?
Fantastic.
Even a broken down old Toyota Corolla.
Yeah, anyway. I was going to say, you've described my running career very elegantly. So before we wrap up, is there any questions that anyone here from the audience has for these professionals? You've got them here on tap for free. Is there any... anyone would like to come up and ask a question or have anything answered?
Come on.
G'day.
Just back to the massage gun. I don't have one myself, but just you said that it sort of stimulates prior to exercise. What if you're what if you're running the 102 at Tarawera and you're at Lake Okataina and one of your crew has the massage gun? Is that going to stimulate you to go on for the rest of it?
Does your friend have a massage gun?
Asking for a friend. Okay, yeah.
I mean, probably in that situation, I'd imagine you're kind of almost going to do whatever you can. And it's kind of like, if you're like, I'm either going to be pulling out or this is the only option I've got, you're probably going to be like, I'm going to give it a go. One really good way or kind of an alternative to help kind of calm tissue down is what would be deemed light touch. It's similar to just your massage that you normally get, but light touch is like stroking your skin. It sounds super strange. I understand that. But if I explain it a little bit further, you do get a kind of a oxytocin release, and it's kind of nicknamed a cuddle hormone. It's released when when a baby is first born, the skin-to-skin contact is a fundamental way of helping calm a baby down. If somebody's sick, often someone will kind of stroke their back in order to help calm them down. So something like that is actually another really good alternative to doing something like that. It sounds super strange, but it can actually be super effective.
Telling someone to calm down always helps too, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's always a good option.
I am so stressed.
Calm down, man.
Calm down.
Just calm down. Yeah. Was there anyone else who had a... Oh, here we go.
I've actually got two questions. The first one kind of follows on from what you were talking about just then, Luke. So you talked about calming down the nervous system. I'm wondering whether you have any advice for someone who needs to calm down their nervous system, and how they might go about doing that after a run to recover.
I mean, what Vaughan said before, the breathing is a very good way. Often a lot of the kind of exercises that people will do will have an element of breathing in it. So often people will look at things like yoga, meditation, which are very breathing focused. And so, yeah, that's probably the two main things.
Mindfulness apps are really good. You know, like 10 minutes out of your day, 5 minutes out of your day, you can get them for 3 minutes out of your day. Just sort of focusing on your breathing is really, really helpful.
Yeah. Mindfulness is a really interesting one because breathing, mindfulness, these are all single task focuses. So really, to calm your nervous system, you just need to do a single task focus. For one of my mates, it's making coffee for his wife, which doesn't sound stress relieving to me, but for him, it's a meditative moment because he goes through the process. So anything where you're immersed in the moment and not about everything else is actually calming your nervous system. You know, so at a geek level, that's your parasympathetic system being stimulated. That's great. So,
what's your second question?
My second question is for Vaughan. You talked about knowing whether or not you're a slow or fast adapter. How might someone who's not a pro athlete find out whether or not they're a slow or fast adapter?
Yeah, good question. It's really interesting. Well, I think you've asked a question within a question. Like, there's pro athletes are no different to a regular person. They've just got more time on their hands to look after themselves. So you're actually more likely to get hurt as an average person being a weekend warrior than just being an elite athlete, because you've got a full-time job and you're doing probably at least 3/4 of the training they're doing. But the indicators of probably why you're a fast adapter versus a slow adapter would be how long does it take you before you get an injury. So if you pick up niggles super often, but you bounce back from them really quickly, and your fitness doesn't seem to be affected by long layoffs, you're probably a fast adapter. If you're someone who's been 3-4 years and you haven't even got a niggle, and you're just sort of like, well, this is probably going to sound bad, but you're probably like at the lower end of the pace spectrum, you could just like a tractor, you can just keep going, you might be more of a slower adapter. So there's no rules. The best way to find out is to get physiological testing, but like for most of us, that's not our interest point. So I think if you're really quickly adapting to things and picking up niggles regularly but recovering, you're probably a fast adapter, and vice versa.
One other question that came in, and it kind of circles back to some of the things that we were talking about earlier about numbers and things about what we should be aiming for, but Is there a way to figure out what the optimum workload is to become better at our chosen sport of endurance running without getting injured? Is there a magic way to figure that out?
My rule of thumb is the least amount you can get away with. Yep, which sounds dumb, but for me it makes sense because my paradigm would be that continuity matters more than like boom or bust. So if you can get away with less than everyone else and get the same results, then you're winning, man. If you're smashing yourself and you're getting the same results as your mates, you probably feel a bit cheated. Everyone needs a little bit of different stimulus. Some people operate really well off big miles, and there's nothing wrong with that. If they can do that for large periods of time and get continuity, go at it. That's a skill. You know, resiliency is a skill. Physical and mental resiliency is a skill. For someone like me, I can't do big mileage before I get busted. So the least I can get away with is the best option. Yeah. But if I can get 6 months as opposed to 6 weeks of training, that's going to be better off.
I mean, I talk from an athlete perspective. For the most part, I run 3 days a week. And so, I mean, my personal best is 109 for a half marathon. And so it is something that I kind of go and I look at, well, there hasn't really been a difference in the amount of training that I've done. Well, in the last year, I've actually stripped a lot of my runs out and kind of put in a lot of cross-training, and there hasn't been a aqua jogging and cycling, and it hasn't actually been a difference of performance. Yeah, I've actually probably been a lot better and probably kind of prepared for the things that I have been doing because I've been a lot more consistent.
109 off 3 days training.
Pretty much, yeah.
Get out.
Not 3 days training, 3 days
running.
Getting
chased down K Row.
3 days running, sorry, 3 days running, yeah.
Getting chased down K Row, but it doesn't matter because he's faster than everyone else. So.
Got to win that first 5 metres, though, eh?
Wow. It's, gosh, that's incredible, 109 of three. But it, again, everything that you've said tonight feels intuitive. You know, I think for so many of us over the years and social media, professional athletes on social media, trends, wanting to keep up, you know, having groups of friends, we've all kind of thrown ourselves willy-nilly into these different things, but your advice has been common sense and it seems like it might work. Again, I do kind of worry that you're putting yourself out of a job, but you know, thank you very much to the three of you for coming along, and thank you very much to you all in the audience for coming along. It's been fantastic to get out. We're sorry that we had some sound issues. Again, it's no different from when we record every Monday night in Eugene's bedroom. It's just as shambolic. Thank you to Halitau Tap House on Karangahave Road. That's amazing that you've had us. Thank you to Andrew McDowell in the back. And yeah, that's us. So ka kite anō and take care of yourself. Ka kite.
I have two supplementary questions. I have one supplementary question and I have a retraction. My retraction comes first. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make fun of Mr. Callum's social media question. And I hope that didn't come across as mean-spirited.
Oh, no, I didn't think it came across. I thought it came across as he had a lot of fans out
there. He had a lot of fans. And my second question...
We self-edited out some of the questions.
We self-edited out some of the questions. There were a lot of questions about Luke McCallum.
Yes.
And my second question is, does Luke McCallum and his boys, who all look super fast, or they're like 109 half-marathoners...
Yeah.
Do they have a crew of water walkers, aqua joggers with them? Like, is it like him and Michael Dawson and like Aunt Beryl and, you know, Jim from Accounts? And I want to know who his aqua jogging crew is.
Well, let's put it in the questions for next time, because I'm sure there's going to be next time.
Absolutely.
Let's do it again.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. We'll get things dialed in and we'll go for it.
Lauren was super impressive. Yes. Luke was super impressive. Vaughn was super impressive.
Absolutely.
Vaughn said just beforehand, hey, just a warning, I think I'm going to lose my voice.
Right.
And it was like, that could be problematic in a podcast, but we'll see how we go. But he hung in there.
Yeah, he was good.
He was great. They were all so good and knowledgeable and good sports as well. Plenty of people saying they've been trying and failing that toe thing.
Look down. Look at that. Yeah,
you're just a show off. Anyway, I'm not looking. All right, thank you for tuning in. We're on social media at Dirt Church Radio. Email dirtchurchradio@gmail.com. Get on with it.
You can find us on all the podcast platforms. Like and subscribe if you fancy. And you can download direct from the website, which is dirtchurchradio.com. Don't forget to write in with your greatest run ever. We'd love to hear from you. And you can read them out on the website too.
Thank you to our sponsors, Scott Running, Further Faster, Spring Energy and CLE, Ultra Spire, and thank you to our Patreon supporters and Wild Things.
Yep, thank you to our editor, Kieran. We've got a great show lined up for you next week, so please tune in then. Ka kite anō.
Ka kite anō. Thanks, Rigby.